This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
The boys are happy.
Yeah, there we go. 844-SAY-ACCN. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you.
How you been, man?
Wait a minute.
Boy, I've been good.
Hold on, let's go. X-Men Assemble?
Let's go.
Minus Dave Pasch.
XFL Fever.
We got rid of Dave.
Kicking Dave out?
He kicked Dave out. Levy's taking the lead role.
That's how you roll.
Fuller.
Does Levy know Fuller. You wear, like, superhero outfits on the sideline?
Probably.
Okay, good. Russini's on that crew, too?
Yeah, man.
Diana Russini, Steve Levy, you, and Mac?
Yep. Yep.
I'll watch. I'm going to watch.
When does this start? It's soon.
Next February 8th.
Month? Yeah, next month.
Yes, the Saturday after the second signing
Super Bowl. Yeah, Saturday after the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
All right, let's start first things first. Because you've been doing, I saw you doing
everything.
Citrus Bowl. I saw you doing high school football. I mean, you've been all over the place.
Yeah, man.
I want to go high school with you first.
Okay.
Give me a couple names that you saw that will be ACC related. Of kids that you said, wow, you know what? I knew they were good. We ranked them high, whatever, whatever. Or maybe kids that really exploded that gave you maybe another thing to think about with your list in all these All-Star games.
The one that really just jumps out to me, and it's really one, is quarterback Jeff Sims. The kid that Georgia Tech was able to sign. Now, this was a young man that was committed to Florida State for a long time.
Right.
They make the move. They go a different direction, and again, you know what it is? It's further proof that recruiting's a marathon. It's not a sprint. Mm-hmm. Tech stayed on the kid. They kept recruiting him, even though he had been committed to Florida State for months and months and months. And he had a phenomenal week. And I think the one thing that I always try to acknowledge with an all-star event like that is it's the week leading up to the game that matters, not the game. Mm-hmm. Because you get to see these kids in an environment every single day for 3 hours where they're battling, they're competing, and maybe things don't go their way. How do they respond? This kid was lights out from the moment he arrived, and then he got into the game, lights came on, he performed. And when you look at the impact of a guy like that, given the current state of Tech's roster and what they're trying to do and the evolution of you know, turning that thing over, it begins and ends at quarterback, right?
Right.
So I thought that was really, really impressive. The other guys that were in the game, you've got the two defensive linemen and Desmond Evans
going
to
Carolina.
Miles Murphy going to Carolina.
Yeah.
So critical because we talk all the time, you build a championship team from the inside out. Those kids are both North Carolina kids. We've talked so much before about, you know, Mack Brown or whoever it may be within this state, putting a fence around the state, keeping the best at home. Those kids were impressive. And then there were some offensive linemen, and ironically, committed to Miami or signed with Miami and signed with Florida State, which are two teams, as we all know, that
desperately need the help.
Need the infusion there. So, I thought it was a good group overall. What we always try to kind of see is, you know, how do kids, we set up the week like a training camp week or like your first week in college as a scholarship athlete in the sense of, can these kids handle being told you need to be here at this time, you need to do this at that time. Are you where you're supposed to be when you're supposed to be there? And if you're not, there's consequences.
Right.
And the consequences are you're not going to play as much as the other guy. And so you try to set it up to give them an idea of the accountability of their personal time, you know, when mommy and daddy aren't there tapping them on the shoulder to tell them where to go all the time and what to do. And when you're the big fish in the small pond and all of a sudden you get into a group of 90 other guys that are just like you, what do you do? How do you respond to that? So it was a good week in that regard.
All right. Any other names pop out?
Oh, man.
It feels like
it was 5 weeks ago.
All right. Desmond Evans.
Yes.
Jeff Sims. You think those
Miles
guys
Murphy.
Play right away?
Yeah. Yeah. I think Jeff Sims puts himself in a position where he will, having seen that roster of quarterbacks last summer going into the season, he will be physically far more talented than what they currently have.
Okay.
How steep is the jump is always the determining factor.
Sure.
You know, what can you handle? But the defensive lineman in some way, shape, or form for North Carolina, especially the edge kid, they're going to play.
Okay.
They're too good not to play.
All right. We'll keep eyes on those. I want to go to Monday night. We're going to get to a topic that we brought up last week about Jamie Newman and how that rollover effect now affects major college programs. We're going to do that before you get out of here, along with our gift, right, Pac?
We have a gift to present to you.
It's a little holiday.
Is it a brass basketball?
No.
Nor is it a cut sheet of highlights from ACC.
Because I'd roll that thing right into a gutter.
Yeah, sure you would.
With Pennywise.
This is something that you could use.
You can use this. What we're going to give you, you can use.
Okay.
Here's the question about Monday night.
Mm-hmm.
Packers talked about red zone as being one of the key pieces of the ball game.
Always is.
Right. I've talked about Clemson's ability to run the ball to minimize possessions for LSU.
Mm-hmm.
Are we on the right track or not?
Yes, I think you're on the right track. And I think the really important component to being able to run the football to keep LSU on the sideline is who's running the football. The quarterback. 15 designated rushes.
Right.
All right. Designed plays for the quarterback to run the ball versus Ohio State. And it was really the difference in the ballgame. Because it changes everything that you do on defense. It changes how you align. It changes whether you run the risk of playing man-to-man defense. Because if you're going to play man defense, that means you're going to be putting one safety in the middle of the field. And when that happens, who has the quarterback if the quarterback runs? There's nobody left, right? So it's going to probably put LSU in a position of wanting to sprinkle in some zone to have to account for that. And it's one thing. See, the difference between the two quarterbacks, in my opinion, on both these teams is they're both really, really good athletes.
Mm-hmm.
Joe Burrow makes his plays with his legs when he has to extend plays or create or the initial play breaks down and he's exceptionally gifted at it. Trevor can do that too, but in this offense, they've devised a package for him where the defense every week now, during the course of the week, for the opponent, has to sit there and say, okay, it's not just Travis Etienne. We have to deal with all of the misdirection in the backfield.
Right.
We have to deal with the pullers. We have to deal with backfield action. And now, wait a minute, who's got the ball? Is it the jet sweep guy? Is it Travis Etienne? Is it the quarterback? And if you go back... And I recall this distinctly because we had LSU the following week off of the Ole Miss game.
Right.
And Dave Aranda was just beside himself at their lack of production on the defensive side. And what he said to us, he goes, wasn't that we weren't in the right place. We were in the right place. We weren't following the right things with our eyes. And that's what happened. You get eye violations when all that stuff's happened in the backfield. Next thing you know, you take one false step. And you're done.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, something that's got to be really, really concerning if you're LSU on defense.
You know, the other thing, too, and for all of us, 2 weeks between games is driving everybody bonkers, right? But I think it's been the best thing in the world for both teams. I think Clemson needed to heal up after the Ohio State game.
Mm-hmm.
And the more time you can spend looking at what in the world LSU does offensively, which is almost everything great, more time for Brent Venables is a positive. And I think the flip side, too, for LSU, even though they're in this great rhythm offensively, but they have been all year.
I know.
They probably need 2 weeks to understand, all right, Venables is blitzing from every direction known to man, head on swivel. So I think really both teams – have benefited from the 2 week lapse. I think everybody else has been a negative because you're just ready for the game to start.
Well, you know what's interesting? You say that because it leads me to my thought that I've been having about LSU since the end of the season. You know, we always talk about teams every single week. You go out and you know what? You might not have your A game. You might not play your best game. You may be better than the opponent and you win anyway, but maybe it's just you had a bad day at quarterback or you turned the ball over a bunch. That hasn't happened to LSU.
No, they've been great.
It's been one of those flawless, miraculous, weird stars aligning type deals, right? Mm-hmm. And sometimes I kind of look at that as being the hot team at the end of the season in the NFL that earns the bye, but the bye hurts you because it takes away from your momentum. It's hard to carry that over more than 1 week. And I'm not saying that happens to everybody. I'm not going to say that's going to happen necessarily to LSU. And I'm not expecting them to have a bad game, but don't you expect at some point or another to somebody to not play well?
You know what's been impressive about them? I know there's a lot of things, but offensively, I don't ever remember them having a day of drops. I mean,
they have the highest catch percentage in college football.
It is unbelievable when I've watched them play this year that they catch everything. Now, Burrow's been great. Their wide receivers are great. Right. Trevor Lawrence is great. Their wide receivers are great. But I'm not seeing LSU have the weekend yet. Well, you know, the ball's off a foot and, you know, they haven't had one of those.
They haven't had it. And everybody does. Yeah, that's the thing that's crazy. It just seems like sooner or later it's going to happen, right? Is it going to be Monday night?
One would think.
I don't know. You don't know, but
if it happens Monday night, it'll surprise everybody.
Well, you know,
if it happens Monday night, they'll lose.
Yeah, no question.
That's what will happen.
Well, they've been so impressive. And Clemson really, since October 1st, has been on a different stratosphere, too.
Let me add one thing before we go to break. We'll come back and talk about another piece of this game, which is the wide receivers and the DBs both ways. The other element that factors into this, and they've got the – Clemson has the alien on defense.
The unicorn?
Clemson has the alien.
Yeah.
I mean, the best three-level defensive player in all of college football. And it's not close. Right?
How about this? Over 200 snaps at corner, over 200 snaps at safety, all right?
In addition to linebacker, 400
snaps at linebacker, and I think he's got over 45 snaps at defensive end.
Correct.
Corner now.
Corner.
You heard me say that correctly.
All right. His value at the next level is, and you know this, through the roof.
But here, as it relates to college football too, and this is an area where you talked about Venables coming from all over the place. Do you remember the play against Ohio State where they caught Clemson looking to the sideline and they came up like they were going to call something line scrimmage and they snapped it, right?
Yeah, like 6 yards.
So what Coach Venables wants, he wants to show you this and do this, show you this and that, do that. And while you're sitting there lining up as an offense and you're looking to the sideline to get your call, that's what he's doing. Well, when you take that element away, you take away a little bit of that for Clemson. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see a little bit of tempo
from
for LSU,
offensively
to maybe minimize that a little bit. Mm. But to your point about Isaiah Simmons, the thing that makes – I was on College Football Live yesterday. The thing that makes him so unique is we're in an era of up-tempo, spread you thin horizontally, spread you vertically, and get you with the wrong personnel on the field. Clemson could go on a 10-play drive on defense – not have to change personnel one time and never be at a mismatch disadvantage because of number 11.
I'm going to tell you something. I'm going to have to visit with Emmanuel Acho, by the way, in New Orleans.
About his wardrobe?
Cole Kubley roughed him up last week, and you got him yesterday.
Oh, I got him big time. Holy smokes.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Packer and Durham, along with Mr. XFL, Tom Luganville.
What's the first game? Tampa Bay Vipers against the what?
I've got that's the cool thing about this, I got to say, as opposed to our, as we all know, our college football schedules where we find out every Sunday where we're going.
You know every game you got, right?
Know every game we've got, what time it kicks, what day it is for the full 10 weeks. We've got New York at D.C. week one.
Nicknames?
New York Guardians and the D.C. Defenders.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Plenty of good seats still available.
And always will be.
And always will be.
I got some fun rules in that league, Pack.
They actually are pretty cool. I got to be honest.
I'll be running through some league. I got some rules we'll have to get caught
up on. I'll check
that
out.
Let's just say it's rigged for the offense to have an advantage.
It's rigged?
Oh, man.
It's always good to say that from the new league. It's rigged.
But you're right. We're good here. Now, when New York and D.C. play, is it going to be for some intercontinental television belt?
You never know.
Just checking.
You never know.
Just checking.
Fuller.
Very talkative today.
He's had a talkative week.
Yeah.
Fuller has been quite the showman.
Is that quite the opinion?
Yeah.
A lot of things.
Been all over. All right, give me a couple other things.
What's he doing? Fuller.
Fuller. Fuller's getting ready to go back to upstairs timeout for the 15th.
Oh, is that right? Oh, boy.
Now that you're here, Pac may do an in-show
penalty box.
In-show penalty box.
We have done this a couple times this week.
Oh, boy.
All right. So – let's talk about the back end. Secondaries, Monday night. Everybody talks about Delpit and Stingley for LSU.
Right.
Really good players.
Yes.
What is Clemson's biggest concern? What's LSU's biggest concern when the other guy's throwing it?
So if you are LSU on defense, I think it's actually the same concern for both, to be honest with you.
Okay.
If you go back to the Peach Bowl and you watch how Oklahoma – and I'm rarely critical of coaches. I thought the Oklahoma defensive staff did not do a good job of giving their kids a chance. Because what they kept doing is prior to the snap, they would rotate their safety to the middle of the field, which told the quarterback, oh, this is easy. I got one-on-one on the outside.
Right.
I got one-on-one in the slot, and it's man-to-man. Well, when you do that and you rotate safeties, see number three right there? That's Jacoby Stevens. Jacoby Stevens ended up being the guy that was matched up one-on-one over the slot, which at the time was C.D. Lamb. No, that ain't happening, right? So if you look at Clemson or LSU on defense, if you're Tanner Muse or your Nolan Turner, you don't want to get those guys isolated on a Justin Jefferson or a Ja'Marr Chase out of the slot. It's going to be a mismatch. Yeah. And it is for 90% of the opponents that you're going to play, right?
Right.
I'd expect to see a lot of two high, yep. two safety high, some man concepts underneath blended with some zone. The corners on the perimeter, I think, for both teams are really good. I just think that those, whether it's Kerry Vincent, Christian Fulton, or Derek Stingley, and then, you know, AJ Terrell's got the length, so I think that that helps. The one thing that's interesting is the one thing LSU doesn't have that they generally have had in the past is the big, tall guy. They've got Terrace Marshall, all right?
Who's back,
all right? But the other two guys are, you know, space-type guys with Jefferson and Chase.
Yeah.
And they're just really difficult to handle in space, but they don't have like that 6'6", 6'5", jump ball guy that you have to worry about. All right. So I think, to be honest with you, it's avoiding the bad matchup on the safety for both teams. And then more than anything else, and how many times have we talked about this? Tackling in space. How do you prevent the 7-yard catch from turning into an 80-yard touchdown? Because if these teams don't tackle well in space and give up explosive plays, then the red area production you talked about really comes into play.
Well, again, I still think the red zone is going to be the key with all this stuff. You know, the other thing, too, I think if you're a Clemson fan in this game, the tight end is going to be a worrisome spot. LSU
that guy's good, man.
And he's a great blocker.
Yep.
He can catch the ball. He can go deep. I mean, he can do a little bit of everything. To me, that is the X factor. I mean, everybody knows about the wide receivers and the backs and the quarterbacks and everything else. But I think LSU's tight end is a real problem.
And guess who they have to cover him?
Number 11.
So, again, you don't have to change up personnel. You don't have to rotate guys on and off the field. You can space and play match. That's something that – but I agree with you. The tight end position has been one of the unsung heroes with this offense. There's so much talk about the wideouts and Joe Burrow and Clyde Edwards-Helaire, but Thaddeus Moss has been a real mismatch problem for everybody across the SEC West.
Yeah, started his career at NC State, played here obviously in the Charlotte area at Mallard Creek.
Yep.
Great player, but seems to really fit what Joe Brady wants to do with that next level stuff because it involves that hybrid position.
Absolutely.
Right? Yeah.
I mean, that's one of the interesting things too, if you're a Clemson fan and you haven't seen much of LSU, there's this assumption that LSU is this RPO-based team.
No.
They're not an RPO-based team. They are a team that wants to create one-on-one matchups downfield, which then allows the back. When Pete Carmichael, the offensive coordinator at New Orleans, he brought his staff to clinic with the Tigers at LSU because they wanted to figure out how can we get our backs more involved in the passing game. We're so one-dimensional in relationship.
Well, they had Alvin Kamara and they didn't know what to do with it.
They did exactly, right? So you've got, you know, how did you guys use Darren Sproles? How did you use Alvin Kamara? How did you get these guys involved? And that was really the whole point of the thing. So yeah, do they have an RPO base portion of their offense? Yes, everybody does. But that's not what this thing turned into. Mm-mm. What's so incredible, in my opinion, about the completion percentage for both Joe Burrow and Trevor Lawrence is we're not talking about the air raid where you're dinking and dunking and you're throwing every throw within 5 yards of the line of scrimmage. We're talking about downfield, low percentage traditional throws that would tell you that if you hit on a couple of them, great. These teams are hitting on them like wildfire, and that's rare.
Well, the interesting part, we ran the Brad Edwards piece yesterday about Trevor Lawrence in 5 to 15 throws since October. You saw the game in Chapel Hill.
Yep.
I mean, you were there. You saw the miss down the middle of the field.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they weren't complimenting, and Brad's numbers bear it out. The stuff 5 to 15, 5 to 20 is where he lit it up in the back two-thirds of the season.
Yeah.
Now, what did Clemson change, and what's LSU seeing – to test that? Because to me, you mentioned Jacoby Stevens.
Yeah.
To me, where Clemson goes to work on Monday night in the throw game, and this is why I think the run game becomes critical. Mm-hmm. If ETN or Lawrence or whoever handles the run game, where Clemson can win is Amari Rodgers and the stuff in the middle.
It's stuff in the middle because what's going to happen is if you're struggling versus the run game, LSU's going to have no choice but to bring somebody else into the box. So now that takes you out of too high.
Correct.
Now that lines you in a position where it's all about numbers. So it's about numbers when you're talking pass protection. It's about numbers when you're talking about what the quarterback has to read in terms of coverage. Like, for example, you know, there's been so much talk about Clemson in the early portion of the season struggling versus zone defense. All right. I thought Georgia Tech had a good plan in the opener. They kept the eyes on the quarterback. They sunk. They kept the receivers in front of them. And then they jumped on the ball and they allowed Trevor Lawrence to maybe think something was there that wasn't there. And really what they did is they, people with zone defense are trying to force him to read coverage.
Right.
Reading coverage takes longer, forces you to go through your progressions. If you just give somebody man-to-man coverage and you tell them pre-snap, hey, this is cat coverage. You got that cat and you got that cat. You're making it easy for the quarterback. And that's something that I think that, that LSU's got to avoid. They can't make it too easy for him.
Clemson, you know, it's funny. They hear a lot of folks talk about the hype, the number one offense against the number one defense. Normally when you get that, it's the exact opposite, right? It's going to be, okay, fine, terrific. What's Clemson going to do with this LSU defense?
So when I look,
because LSU's getting healthy at the right time.
LSU is getting healthy at the right time, but for whatever reason, and it's been all year long, it, when Tua was healthy at Alabama, it was an issue. John Rhys Plumlee at Ole Miss, it was an issue. They struggled with quarterback runs. Dynamic quarterbacks, for some reason, has caused LSU a problem. Oklahoma was so outmanned personnel-wise that it didn't matter. Even if, you know, Jalen Hurts could run the football, they didn't have the matchups to win the game. But if I'm Clemson, I want to force LSU to have to change how I defend the box, because to me that's what's going to dictate whether the reads are easy for Trevor Lawrence or whether they're more difficult for Trevor Lawrence. And the way you do that, in my opinion, is winning on first down. Because if you win on first down, now all of a sudden your second and third minute, medium and shorts become more manageable and you're not in obvious passing downs. You could have that second and four and still have the option of running it or throwing it. All right. Then all of a sudden you don't get it. You're third and four. Well, you're still not in an obvious passing situation. I think that's very key. These plays right here. And they're not, I mean, that's quarterback draw. Yeah, the other one where you have the zone and he pulled it because the end collapsed. Those are little tiny wrinkles that are simple reads for the quarterback that can get LSU in a bind if they start committing eye violations with all the backfield movement.
Strange question for you, Tom. LSU has been so good of just absolutely obliterating people, right? They jump you early, they get big leads, and Clemson has too.
Mm-hmm.
But Clemson's now been bloodied in the Ohio State game against a great team in Ohio State.
Sure.
And he found a way to win after spotting somebody a 16-point lead. What does LSU do in a tight game?
We don't know.
It's been a while, right?
I go
back to the Auburn game. And again, the Bama game wasn't a tight game.
No.
It was an intense game.
Right.
But they were always a two-score ahead. Mm-hmm. I know it was on the road. I'm not trying to diminish Alabama on the road. It's a big deal. But they've not been in a game where you say, hey, it's fourth quarter, LSU. What are we doing here? Clemson has.
Yes.
In fact, their last time they strapped it on, they were in the middle of one.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious, thinking, and I'll mention, I was goofing around about this the other day, LSU's going to have a home field advantage here. No question.
Yeah.
But I've also been to Tiger Stadium many times where they will turn on their own quicker than anybody else in the country. And they, I think the mindset of LSU going in this is the coronation. This meant to be. It's destiny. Mm-hmm. We're at home. Man, we've worn out Alabama. We've embarrassed Georgia. Oklahoma's got nothing for us. We've been on cruise control. We got the Heisman winner. We got the best offensive line. We got the coach of the year. This is the coronation in our home state. And we got 70,000 here rooting us on.
Yeah.
What happens if all of a sudden, this one's supposed to be a fist fight.
Yeah.
Now it is. And Clemson's sitting there going, hey, you know what? We've been in this before. Y'all been ragging us about playing nobody? Hey, we've played everybody. So what happens there?
So what you just outlined right there is why I picked Clemson to win the game. Because if it gets close and it gets tight, I know the one team in Clemson, first of all, they thrive when they feel like they're disrespected. Their kids seem to thrive while all the attention's on the other team and they just kind of go about their business, right? That's kind of become their mode of operation, which, hey, listen, I think it's a powerful component. I'm a huge, huge believer in the psychological aspect of exactly what you outlined there, and that is, what do you do when you haven't been there before, when things aren't going well? What happens when, if Joe Burrow throws three interceptions in the first two quarters and they're down by seven late in the third quarter, what do they do? Mm-hmm. What does he do? Right. Nobody knows the answer. You'd like to think as a coach, you know your kids and things of that nature, and they're going to rise to the occasion, but you haven't seen them do it yet. Dabo's seen his kids do it. And to me, I think that that's an advantage going into the game that doesn't have anything to do with athleticism, doesn't have anything to do with X's and O's and things of that nature. It has to do with culture and mindset. And that's not to diminish LSU's culture. Obviously, Ed Orgeron's done an unbelievable job of building up that roster. But I think that's the X factor in the game, personally, and it's why I picked Clemson to win the game. I think it's going to be close. But I do think that if it gets tight, does LSU press? Do they – I don't want to say panic, that's a strong phrase, but do they maybe get out of their comfort zone, get out of their rhythm, and start doing things that are uncharacteristic to their nature because they're in foreign territory? That's what you worry about, I think, as a football coach, because things have gone so easy for them, Pat.
Almost too easy.
It's almost too easy. It's similar to what we talked about in the first 4 weeks of the season with Clemson. You know, coming off of the 2018 season, we all became so conditioned to say, oh, well, it's easy. Look at these guys. It's flawless. They just go out there, put their pants on. And then all of a sudden you find out it's really not, mm-hmm. right? It's hard, yep. and it gets harder the more people expect it of you. That's why the components to this game, I don't know about you guys, but I almost feel like this has been the most difficult national championship contest to predict mm-hmm. or project, but at the same time, maybe the most highly anticipated games that I've ever wanted to watch in recent memory of college football.
Well, the other part, too, is this, and I think we knew 1, 2, and 3 were really, really good. And whoever filled in at 4, Oklahoma, Utah, whatever was going to happen at 4,
mm-hmm.
that team was not going to be favored against the number one, whether it was Ohio State or LSU, right. however it shook out at the final poll, or Clemson or whatever. And when LSU obliterated Oklahoma, and it was a blitzkrieg now.
Oh, heck
it,
yeah,
was. It was 7-on-7.
Yep.
Maybe 7-on-9. but that idea, and Pac said this last week, and I totally agree, we were fortunate in college football to have 3 great teams this year. And we saw a great semifinal between mm-hmm. Clemson and Ohio State. And now we probably have set the stage for a great championship game.
Yeah.
But sometimes they don't deliver as great. We're fortunate when they become great games.
I mean, a year ago, I still remember us goofing around before the game, doing the show.
Yeah.
SiriusXM, thinking, man, Bama, unbelievable, right? And one of this offensive juggernaut, all these frisbee-catching dogs, Tua doing his thing.
Same thing we're talking about now with LSU.
Same exact thing. Exactly. And you know what? Not a single person on the planet Earth thought 44-16 was going
to. And it plays to Clemson's strength. And you mentioned it. I think the intangible factor is Clemson's been there. They thrive in this role. Mm-hmm. They understand it. And there was an interesting statement yesterday. I think Jen Latta had it. Dabo Swinney, one of his goals this week, and he mentioned it in passing, not in the presser the other day, is we got to be ready to play Monday, not Friday.
Right.
Yeah. Well, he's been there to understand that. The one thing that really, I think, works to their favor.
You know what's interesting you said about nobody saw 44-16 coming, and it's so true, because when you looked at the players on both teams, the score shouldn't have been that way.
Right.
So it's further evidence that when you get two teams that are so evenly matched, it's not the plays you make, it's the mistakes you don't make.
That's right.
And on that night, Alabama made a lot of mistakes. Ooh. A lot of mistakes. And you know what? Clemson didn't make as many. And right. then Clemson capitalized on Alabama's mistakes. And so I'm not looking for, oh, wait, this guy's going to make this play and this guy's going to make.
Sure.
Which team avoids the turnover? Which team avoids not converting the fourth down, you know, in That's the red right. area and four down turn? Those are the types of plays.
You know what else happened in that game last year that nobody was counting on? Was that Clemson staff, I thought, totally outcoached Nick Saban.
Totally agree.
I mean, it was not even fair.
Yeah, yeah.
And
that especially coming out of halftime.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
And that was the thing going into it. You're thinking, boy, Saban's one of the all-time greats. Dabo's rocking and rolling.
Yeah.
You know, that would be a great battle. That was the biggest mismatch of the field.
Well, that's what was so surprising to me was, so for example, had the Citrus Bowl, Alabama and Michigan, all right? Michigan had their way with Alabama in the first half. All right.
Just stopped the run.
Couldn't stop the run.
Right.
Right. They couldn't stop the run. They couldn't run the ball. They couldn't do any of that stuff, right? They go out into the locker room. They come back out. They make some adjustments and completely own the second half.
Right.
So you were kind of expecting in last year's championship game for Nick Saban and his staff to do that. And they came out. They didn't.
Had nothing.
Nothing.
Other than a terrible
no
fake
answers.
Field goal, which
yep.
was a desperation act.
All right. Mm-hmm. When we come back on this fine program, ladies and gentlemen, a little bit more on Monday night's game. We have a gift for Luganville. We may even throw a college football 150 curveball at you. Have you seen this players list?
Yes.
This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.
Fuller's underneath my feet now. He's chilling down here.
You see the they're not the dogs are not coming to New Orleans, so we're going to take these with us. By the way, you like that? You take pets. This. That's the
those
that's
are your
Fuller.
Those are your
oh Robert took
your
care.
Road dogs.
Road dogs, which by the way is the nickname for Clemson's D.
Road dogs.
Yeah. That's what he's called. Venable's got those guys calling themselves the Road Dogs.
Road dogs.
You like that?
I think I gotta like it.
Kind of like that name.
All right, yeah. give me. One player, offensive line, defensive line for each school we need to focus on because, you know, everybody watches the ball. So who are the players? Clemson's offensive line, LSU's defensive line, and vice versa on Monday night.
LSU's defensive line, Kalevon Chasen, is the one lone pass rusher because they're actually built in the interior. Their defensive tackle's really good. That's where they're strong in their front.
Yeah, I agree with that.
They've only got one edge guy, and he's a good one. Don't get me wrong. Kalevon Chasen is a really, really good player. I think he's a guy that you've got to be aware of, so much so that you might have to have – some H-back tight end back help on him on obvious passing downs. And then conversely, I think the young freshman Tyler Davis is a load at tackle for Clemson. He is going to be – I think he's further ahead than where Christian Wilkins was as a true freshman. And we all know the impact Christian made. So he's a guy that I think inside could cause some real problems.
What about Divinity's return for LSU?
You know what? It's interesting because I've always felt throughout this year that that was the one area of LSU's defense where they didn't have that eraser, that guy that could cover up mistakes or things. And they had it with Devin White, obviously.
Yeah, he's great.
And then you lose Divinity, and it really magnifies your lack of depth. That's an area that has not – you know, it's interesting, too, because I think between Ohio State, LSU, and Clemson – you could probably make the argument that that's the one area for all three defenses where maybe they're not as good as they are in the front or the back end. They're good and they're effective, but maybe they're not loaded with a bunch of difference makers, all three of them across the board. The thing about Clemson's guys at linebackers, they just play so hard. I mean, their effort, it's not like they're running outside of Isaiah Simmons, but Skalski and that group, that, you know, they're not running around, you know, with a bunch of 6'3", 240-pound athletes, like Stephon Anthony was and some of those guys. That's not what they're playing with right now. So, but I think Tyler Davis is a budding star along the defense.
So who's LSU got to put and Clemson have to put in their offensive lines to minimize those guys?
You got to
neutralize, minimize.
Well, for Clemson, it's going to have to be the offensive tackles because the edge guy is who it's going to be.
So you're talking about Carmen.
Jackson Carmen and
Tremaine
Ankrum. So those two guys. And then on the inside, it's going to be the guard tackle combination for LSU up front. Because here's what happens and what Venables does. And we talked about, you know, all right, we line up in this, but we're going to do this. We show this. We're going to come from here. You think we're coming from here, but we're not coming from here. So what happens is you get Tyler Davis on the inside and then you walk up some of these linebackers into the gaps. And then at the snap of the ball, one guy pulls out, the other guy goes, and now all of a sudden maybe the offensive line call is incorrect and they void a gap. And that's where I think the interior players and the defensive front for Clemson could have an advantage.
Man, I'll tell you what, I just hope we get an A effort for both teams, right?
Yes. Because
if we do, this has a chance to be an epic classic.
That's what I was saying earlier. I get this feeling like, dude, this is maybe one of the most highly anticipated championship games and most difficult to predict.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it really is.
Yep. Yeah, that's why I think it'll be close. I think it's going to be really close.
There's Tyler Davis right there.
Yeah.
No kidding. He's only double teamed.
Look at him holding up two guys at Louisville's offensive line.
Look at him.
So the alien can go make the tackle.
Yep. Oh, do you see that pressure package right there? Oh boy.
Hey,
That's Jamie Newman.
This is what it's like sitting in a film room with Luke's at home on the 94-inch big screen.
Oh.
Speaking of Jamie Newman.
Yeah, we need to go to theirs. Yeah. All right, where are we headed on this? Because Jamie Newman announced he's going to transfer, right? He graduates, he's going to leave. I said to Pac, this is an interesting precedent because he's got a year left, and we know Sam Hartman did not play in four games.
Right.
So he qualifies for the red shirt.
Yes.
Okay. But if I'm Dave Clawson, okay, Jamie, you were fantastic. You were, you know, third team all ACC, whatever the case may be. How much better is it going to be for Jamie Newman at a new spot for 1 year?
Depends on the personnel around him. I mean, let's just assume that Georgia could be a destination. Okay.
Okay, sure.
So let's
take Jalen Hurts and use that as the example.
Okay, we could use Jalen Hurts as that example. So if Georgia's an example, we know Georgia's got good personnel. They're going to have good players around them. I know for a fact Georgia is very concerned about their quarterback depth in terms of guys that are ready to play.
Ought to be after yesterday.
Yeah. No kidding. And so it would make a lot of sense. To me, this seems to be more about personal perception improvement based off of where he's playing, not how he's playing. Does that make sense?
I get it.
You know, and listen, we're in an era right now where everybody's trying to magnify.
I also saw Grayson Lambert go from Virginia to Georgia and not play.
Exactly. Yeah. No, the other way. Georgia to Virginia.
Georgia. No. Wasn't he it? Went Virginia to Georgia.
Oh, yeah, he did. Went Virginia to Georgia. Exactly. Yeah, no. Didn't but play. We're talking about two different caliber players.
I understand that, but we're talking but about
the mindset of the student athlete. Yes. Is, yeah. Hey, I'm bettering myself.
Absolutely. Not necessarily. Not necessarily. Well, right.
And here's the other concern I have. For coaches who are in a high risk, high reward scenario anyway, and we always talk about the security of the millions.
Sure.
But if I'm a coach, and let's take any coach, I've got to have a clock in my head on quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. I got to have a clock in my head on 22 positions, but I really got to have one on quarterbacks, Luke's, because now this one guy, mm-hmm. I mean, think about the scenario at a handful of schools where you got two guys within a year and a half of one another. You get all these early entries in there. So now I've got to almost have three because it's a given I'm going to lose one.
Correct. Now, here's one of the ways that coaches are trying to work around that. They're trying to use the blue shirt rule. All right. So if you're not
blue shirt,
the blue shirt rule, not the gray shirt rule,
not the red shirt,
not the red shirt rule, the blue shirt rule, not the gray shirt rule, the blue shirt rule, the blue shirt rule.
Say that quickly.
Blue shirt rule, blue shirt with an R rule. what you're doing is these are kids that can come in and they can play under the 4-game rule. All right.
Sure.
But they don't count until the next class.
That's right.
So what you're trying to do, now you can't do it with everybody, but there are some numbers that you can do it with, and that could be one of the ways you try it. Because what you're essentially saying is if you've got a quarterback that's an upperclassman, all right, then you got a quarterback that's three classes behind him, but there's one guy in between there, the guy in between there is transferring.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, he's gone.
He's gone because his clock has started. He's got minimal time to make an impact. He better go somewhere if he wants to get eligible and play.
They're just not enough reps.
Right.
Is what the bottom line is.
So what you'd want to try to do is get yourself in a redshirt, grayshirt situation, which is very difficult to do at quarterback because the high profile guys are all going to want to go somewhere and play right away and compete right away. But if you can pull that off, you could at least establish some depth, some developmental depth. Doesn't count against you immediately that you maybe can work through in the future. Oh, it's a nasty puzzle now. Wes, I mean, it really is. I just, you know, going back to Jamie Newman, I came on here and I shared with you guys. I thought he was really, really good, like really good. Does going somewhere else improve his draft stock off of a team that is going to have the other guys around him for the most part returning? All right, the wideouts are coming back.
You answered this question originally by saying it depends where you go and who's surrounding you.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's really that simple.
Yeah.
And here's the other thing, too. Don't let the outside influences create the inside turmoil.
No doubt. And I'll tell you the other thing, too. And you mentioned Jalen Hurts. This guy is a much better passer than Jalen Hurts.
I understand that part.
Much better.
I'm just talking about the precedent of Jamie Newman. Because I think Jamie Newman, and we'll go to break on this, I think Jamie Newman doing what he's doing could have a trickle-down effect across a lot of college football. Mm-hmm. This is not Jalen Hurts and the national championship.
Right.
This is not.
Sure. You know, he didn't have to leave. His eligibility is not exhausted at Wake. He could just stay at Wake.
Right.
Well, now that makes Dave Clawson feel.
That's the other part about this. And the high risk, high reward.
Oh, yeah.
You know, all right. We'll take a break. Come back. We got a gift for Luke's pack. Cassius Stanley, by the way, at 9 o'clock. We're excited about that because Packer's already said he dunked it with his knees the other night in Atlanta.
Packer and Durham.
There's crispy, and then there's crispy-er. Try our new and improved Tyson Crispy Chicken Strips. Crispy just got crispy-er.
Final segment with Mr. Luganville. We got the Power Hour coming up top of the hour.
Yeah, we're doing. Cassius Stanley will be here.
Yeah, you know, he's averaging 11.2 points a game.
Stop it. You're not impressing anybody.
4.2 points, 4.2 rebounds.
That's it.
He's becoming a prolific dunker. Already, and he's just a pup.
It is.
6'6".
You want the breakdown? There's the breakdown.
I want to tell you something. You're going to see Tom Luganville in 2020 about springtime when this XFL thing ends, the regular season, playoffs, XFL World Bowl, or whatever it was you won.
A million-dollar game, dude.
That's it, the million-dollar game.
I don't know what it is this year, though.
About July.
About $1.50.
You know what I'm thinking? I'm thinking Hey, Drew and Josh, I know we can get the Lumberjacks on camera here for you real quick. I'm sensing that about third week in June, the anchor at the All-ACC desk in Bristol for about four nights.
There he is.
June?
Yeah.
Nah.
we need to do it earlier when basketball is still going on.
Hey, look at the boys.
What about March? How about March?
Definitely. March. Probably plan for the whole month of March.
Yeah, that'd be good for us.
Yeah. And make sure I have shot sheets, too, so I can do all the highlights.
All right, here we go.
Remind me to talk to Amy about that.
Yeah, we will. We'll take care of it in New Orleans for you. All right. We had a ceremonial gift delivered this week.
Okay.
Because apparently in your angst to get out of Central Florida after the game.
Uh-huh.
True?
No, because I was stuck there due to the Under Armour game.
Oh, were you? Okay. Well, the Citrus Bowl sent us some gear, but we thought it would be appropriate since you did the game that you get one of the shirts.
Now, wait a minute. Why did they send you anything?
Because that's who we are.
Do you know what that is?
Yeah, vacation rent by owner.
What's it called, though?
Vrbo.
Oh!
It used to be VRBO.
It was
last
VRBR,
year.
VR, which is what it still should be, right?
Like, well, yeah, I kind of thought that.
Isn't that an acronym?
But you know what? Since we are company people across the board here, I'll certainly recognize the corporate sponsorship entity, and they'd like to be known as Vrbo.
By the way, did you like how I was able to get Nick Saban to throw oranges out to the crowd during the trophy ceremony?
You did an outstanding job with that.
You really did. Your trophy presentation was fantastic.
Well, you know, I studied for months and months on end before I even knew we were getting that assignment.
Wear this with pride.
I am going to wear that with pride.
Yeah.
I don't remember anybody tugging at my shoulder telling me, here's a shirt. What are you talking about?
Well, we got a shirt for
you. I know.
Would you like a Camping World shirt, too?
We got a Camping World shirt. Since you were broadcasting from the stadium, we can give you one of those shirts.
I know, right?
Yeah, if you'd like one.
Fuller, very nice. Let's go. Fuller is upset that Jamie Newman has entered the transfer portal.
Apparently so.
He let out a...
Fuller's on borrowed time at 8:52 this morning.
Do it. Fuller, you're going to lose our privileges for the power hour.
Oh, yeah. He's totally out.
What does he want?
What's he want?
He wants to hang with the Lugs.
Of course. I'll take him for a ride in the Jeep. Dogs love Jeeps.
Oh, he does that.
Now, yeah, see, that dogs love Jeeps.
Jeep is here.
It is.
So, if you're going to pick Clemson Monday night?
I am. And I know it's not a popular pick, and I'm hesitant.
It's good on this network.
Yeah,
though.
I know. But I'm hesitant just because... For what we acknowledged when we started off the hour, that sometimes when you're having one of those magical years, mm-hmm. it doesn't matter who the opponent is, mm-hmm. and it's just meant to be. So that worries me a little bit.
Right.
But then, you know, Pack over here in his infinite wisdom brought up, that's kind of how we all looked at Alabama last year, right? Going into the championship game,
sure.
That's not how it worked out. So I'm going to roll the dice a little bit.
I am surprised the line is what it is. And I'm not a gambler.
What is it, 6.5? 6?
I think that's right.
Yeah,
that seems like a lot of points.
It does.
And at no point in time during the year, I would have told you one team 6 points better than the other one. My opinion.
No, that's good. I totally agree with that.
It's not going to have anything to do with Monday night. You know, whoever executes the best wins.
Yeah, whoever executes the best wins.
To me, I still think the red zone is going to be the key in this one. It was in the Fiesta Bowl. I mean, totally. If Ohio State maximizes the red zone, that game doesn't become close.
No, it's over.
They're cruising.
Yeah.
You know what? Clemson's D's been so good. I mean, their red zone D's fantastic.
Yes.
And they're used to that, too. I mean, I kind of did that to Alabama a year ago. They said, hey, you want to go 20-20 all night long?
Yeah.
You guys get inside of here,
ahead.
We're going to shut you down.
Well, I think that's the other thing, too. You talk about 20-20. One of the things that people have had a hard time doing against LSU is forcing them to earn it. Force them to actually play offense. Don't let them just run the ball on first down, second down, throw a 40-yard pass, and it's a touchdown. They're off the field.
Right.
Make them play offense. Make them – most teams who have to execute – for the length of the field, will make a mistake.
Eventually.
Something will happen, yeah. But very few teams have been able to do that with LSU.
Yeah. Two great teams, man.
Yeah,
Can't wait to watch.
It's going to be awesome.
Hope you have a great 2020. Enjoy
your
shirt.
I will, in my new
Vrbo
shirt.
And the Gladiators and the Guardians and the Defenders on February the 8th.
That's it. On ABC.
Yeah.
2 p.m.
Steve Levy, Tom Luganbill, Greg McElroy, Diana Russini.
Covering it from angle to angle.
Yeah.
Corner to corner.
You saw it. He told Russini on Twitter that, you know, you're a handful to work with.
Well, I mean, obvious.
Yeah.
Why? We got to get him some behavioral. He just looked at the TV.
Sure he did. He started barking at himself yesterday.
He did?
Yeah, that was the other execution we had to get rid of. So there we go.
Does he not realize that we're on live radio
and television
right now? Does he not realize that there are 22 people that are getting The show interrupted. No, Tom. Good stuff, guys. Thanks for having me.
Hey, it's a pleasure. Anytime. Yeah. Safe travels, my man.
All right, buddy.
We'll see you soon.
The Packer and Durham Podcast.